Hey guys, Luke here. Before we get started with today's show, I just wanted to make sure that you know that we have released the Mandarin Blueprint Challenge. We designed this challenge meticulously so that you can reach basic Chinese literacy in 15 days from zero. That's right, reading sentences without the aid of pinyin and just characters only. So if you're interested in signing up, it's just $7. Head over to mandarinblueprint.com/challenge now. Enjoy the show.
欢迎来收听我们的汉语蓝图播客。 Welcome back to the Mandarin Blueprint Podcast. Well, I just committed the most classic podcast error, spoke for about an hour, waxed poetic about all of these great Mandarin insights, and then realized that I hadn't pressed record. Really felt like I nailed it too. I was like, this is the podcast that everybody's going to be like, man, you really connected with me, dude. And then I was just like, oh, was just speaking to no one in my room for an hour, like a crazy person, but here I am. Anyway, we're back. It's fine. No big deal. Do it again. It'll be better this time. All right. First things first, before we get into the comments and emails, I just wanted to make a quick announcement that we have a new free webinar available at mandarinblueprint.com. If you go to mandarinblueprint.com, it's right there in the top right corner, a little button that says watch webinar. If you're interested, it is a full stack explanation of everything that the Mandarin Blueprint method stands for, everything that Luke and I have built the philosophy of Mandarin Blueprint around, and it's about an hour and a half long. It will give you a really good instruction manual about why, you know, other methods are difficult to succeed with, and how the build, get, and activate structure that we have in Mandarin Blueprint is highly effective. If you're interested, it's free. It's a recorded webinar that we put together, and I'm actually really proud of it. I think we did a really good job all around. Luke hosts it. I think you'll really enjoy it. So check out that webinar over at mandarinblueprint.com. And with that in mind, let's get into the questions again. All right, last time I mentioned it, I'm re-recording it. All right. Kevin Cohen in the community forum. He says, hi everyone, I'm in my 40s and I've recently moved last autumn from the Philippines to Shanghai. I live in the international Biyun community in Jinqiao, Pudong. I'm an international school teacher who loves my job and lifestyle. I'm still very much a beginner in Chinese. I'm at level 17 and on a 197-day flashcard streak. Fantastic. Recently, I started one-on-one lessons at a school nearby. I love Mandarin, which has been challenging. I am enjoying the Mandarin Blueprint approach daily, but I worry about if I can really become all that fluent in the long run. I lived in Japan for 10 years, and I never really became proficient as a Japanese speaker or reader. I believe that the Mandarin Blueprint method is making a difference this time around. I'm looking forward to this summer to step up my studies and join the challenge. If anyone lives in Shanghai that would like to meet up, let me know. I'm curious to know if anyone uses Himalaya for beginner Chinese podcasts or content. Thank you and welcome, Kevin, to Mandarin Blueprint. First of all, just let me help broadcast. If you're in Shanghai and you want to meet up with Kevin, get in touch with him on the community forum. Just head over to the community forum. If you're listening to this soon after it's released, it should be one of the most recent posts, or just search Kevin Kewen, that's Ke like Graham and Wen like Dongwen, right? So you can find that there. Send him a message. You can click on anybody's name in the community forum to send them a private message. And, you know, so then maybe you guys can have a meetup. Study buddies are really helpful in the long run. Now, I want to comment on this point where Kevin says, I'm enjoying the Mandarin Blueprint approach daily, but I worry if I can really become all that fluent in the long run. And then he makes a comparison to Japan. But let me just reframe this for a minute. Let's take a different field. For example, if we were to talk about, say, fitness instead of Chinese. Talk about fitness. If I said, in 10 years, can you become fit? You know, very fit. I mean, all of us would say yes, because it takes less time than that, right? So we wouldn't have a doubt as to whether or not it was possible. The possibility is crystal clear. Of course you could become fit in 10 years. Of course you could become fluent in 10 years. The question, though, is one of priority, right? I was thinking a lot about priorities recently because I think priority helps you understand who you are as a person, because priority is the boots on the ground actions that result from who you are. So, for example, most of us have a fairly similar set of values, right? So there'll be things like love, health, freedom, safety and security, novelty, connection, status. These are things that we value, right? And there's going to be some variation between people, but those are fairly universal values. We create our priorities to serve these values. That's how we come up with the Yoxianquan. That's how you say priority in Chinese. And that literally means superior or deserving of special attention. Yo xian means first, and quan means right. Like, I have the right to this, that kind of right. So what has the right to get the first special treatment? Well, that's your priority, and your priorities should serve your values. And your values derive from who you are as a person, right? So take fitness, for example. I had this moment of gratitude while I was out on a run because I realized that I'd surpassed 10 years of consistently exercising. And by consistently exercising, I mean done something that's made me get sweaty and in a state of either cardio or strength conditioning, or in some cases, you know, stretching and stuff that has raised my heart rate and gotten me exercising. And I've done it at least 3 to 4 times a week on average for 10 years. And in the past 3 years, I feel like more like 6 or 7 times a week, because I don't usually take a day off. I just vary the exercise I'm doing so that I don't overstress any particular part of my body. But the thing is, people think that that's like about discipline or grit or any of those other things that are kind of, in my opinion, just sort of hubris masking itself as wisdom. It's none of that. It's just a priority, right? Health is a value. And so for me, and so the priority of exercising is in service of that value. And a lot of times these values interlink. So for example, yes, health is the primary value that exercise serves, but health leads to freedom, because, you know, one of the biggest things that kills your freedom is being sick and, you know, unable to use your body as you normally would. And freedom leads to better connection with, you know, people I love, right? It also, in many cases, I've discovered that exercise gives me novelty, because the states of mind that I'm in when I'm having a runner's high, for example, introduce many great ideas, which I then apply to, say, Mandarin Blueprint, which gives me safety and security because it helps pay the bills, right? And so, like, all of these things end up connecting. And because I've thought about that, then the priority is easy. It's like, well, of course I'm going to do this. It's not a negotiable thing, because it serves my values and that's who I am, right? So why do I exercise? It's just like, it's a priority because of that. And so if Chinese becomes like that for you, Kevin, and you say, okay, Chinese is a priority because it serves my various values, for example, connection. If you learn Chinese properly, you have the potential to connect with over 1 billion people, right? And that gives you freedom to traverse China. And then that could even make, you know, you could end up with a situation of facilitating a great deal of love, whether that be just brotherhood or friendship. I don't know your relationship status. Maybe you meet somebody. I don't know. Maybe you're married. I don't know. But the point is, oh, and then of course, learning Chinese gives you status. Right. Now, even with fitness, like if I have a physically, you know, good looking body, then that can help with status in some sense, you know, and if you can speak Chinese, I mean, that's damn impressive. People are really impressed by that. They think that you're a higher status person if you can speak fluent Mandarin. Right. So like there's all these values that this process of gaining knowledge in Mandarin serves. So my recommendation is just set your priorities. And hey, maybe that, you know, way of setting the priorities, you decide, you know what, forget Chinese. I'm going to focus on making artisanal dog sweaters. Sure. Like, that sounds great. You know, it's not about the specific thing that you're doing. It's about recognizing how the priority, which influences your boots on the ground actions that you will take, where the rubber meets the road of your values and connects them to your values, of which derive from who you are. So if you want, you can start from, who am I? Am I a Chinese learner? Am I a person who, a daily improver? Am I a daily improver? Is that who I am? Am I a person who values these things? Okay, what things? List them, right? What actions serve that? If I'm a Chinese learner, how does that serve my values, which derive from who I am? And that analysis is something that I think provides fuel to make it through the daily process. Because again, there's no doubt you can be fluent in 10 years, probably way less. What's the fuel that's going to keep you consistent day to day? Well, it's that priority analysis. So I think as long as you keep that in mind, review it, maybe quarterly, review your priorities, and then even annually is fine. And then that should be the fuel you need to keep going. Also, you say, I'm curious to know if anyone uses Himalaya for beginner Chinese podcasts or content. For those of you who don't know, Himalaya is a podcast app that has loads of different Chinese content, audiobooks, stories, regular old podcasts, you know, all that stuff. Himalaya is the Chinese version, and then Himalaya is the international version. They have different content because of copyright, but in my experience, there's not a lot of beginner stuff on there, but it's an excellent app to have. So I wouldn't discourage you from using it, because any input, even if it's incomprehensible, is moving you towards your journey. But since you're on level 17 and day 197, I would say that the better immersion at the moment is to use the sentence packs that are at the end of each level, starting from level 13, because that is where you'll get immersion, where you stand the chance of understanding it. Even with the Chinese that you've read through these levels, it's still sometimes hard to go from just reading and listening to just listening. So focusing your immersion on that stuff at the moment is probably a better use of your time. But turning on Himalaya and getting into the habit of that, even if it's just on a secondary phone that you just keep playing in the corner of your room, that's a great idea. Just bear in mind that it probably doesn't have a lot of beginner content. Maybe they've added something since I last checked, but mostly it's for Chinese people, so it's not going to be like super simple language. Next, we have an email from Dennis Katana. He says, hey, Luke, I thought I'd give my 2 cents on this that may be helpful for intermediate learners. So intermediate learners, listen up. Something that's helped me a lot last year for learning Spanish, immersion-wise, was trying to speak to native speakers a specific non-language learning environment in a specific non-language learning environment via virtual reality. I join Spanish-speaking world/servers and do my best to speak only Spanish, whether it be a coop working environment, VR multi-monitor setup, gaming, or just a chat. I made some rules for myself, including if they speak English, try not to give in, never resort back to English. If they try, just say, I can't speak English well. Luckily, I speak some other languages to be more convincing here. I'm both doing the things I enjoy, gaming or just casual hanging out, and talking about everyday things, all built up on what I studied and more. I found this super boosted my learning. Without having to leave my home and with almost no risk of embarrassment, anonymity and ability to just log out, over time it really built my confidence. And it gets quite close to simulation in person, a simulation of in-person interactions. Playing Never Have I Ever in Spanish-only karaoke club to break the ice, learning to salsa dance in a virtual group class, and making a friend, veering off and just chatting about their interests and hobbies. It's hard to imagine a more efficient way, even compared to real life. The volume of people and ability to travel through space digitally is, of course, much faster. I treated this almost like a class, allocating 1 hour minimum and approaching and speaking to at least 5 different groups, people per session, was super fun. I noticed there's the equivalent for Chinese world servers. So it may be helpful for those deep along in their journey looking for a way to be immersed. If you'd like to hear more about my experience with this, just let me know. I love this stuff. I think it's yet another excuse buster because we all have to speak. We're, of course, big advocates for making sure you get enough input so that you have something to say. But anybody in the intermediate course should have something to say. Maybe not super well, but then again, that's what the speaking is for, because the speaking practice activates all that passive immersion. The speaking practice is what activates your passive vocabulary. That's a better way to put it. A lot of times, introverts or shy people, I would consider myself shy, not particularly introverted, but like somebody who doesn't want to necessarily interact for various reasons will make excuses not to do so because, hey, you do need more input. And even if you do start activating, you're going to still need more input. So why not just keep getting more input? And that's not the worst, because of course, the more input you get without creating bad output habits, that is a good thing. However, you of course have to break through that at some point. And now we have yet another example of how you can do this. Now, VR probably requires some equipment or maybe multi-monitors, so it may not be available for everyone, but there were already language exchange apps, and there are already loads of Chinese people willing to talk to you on WeChat, and there's already Discord, and there's already forums, and there's already places where you can use text to communicate with people. I mean, people sometimes say, like, do I need to have an italki tutor to succeed with Mandarin Blueprint? And it's like, no. An italki tutor is totally optional. Like, that's one of the things you can do if you want to have the extra benefits of, like, a teacher who gives you a word list of what you talked about and all that stuff. But if you get enough input, and especially if you do immersion as well, then you can just go talk to people. And there's plenty of people willing to talk. So don't convince yourself that there's no way for you to practice speaking. I don't care where you are in the world. You can practice speaking. This is VR, right? As an example, like you can talk to anybody. Or I shouldn't say you talk to anybody, but like you can talk to a person who speaks Chinese with ease in a few clicks. So I would highly recommend that if you're one of those people who's making that excuse in your mind not to speak, to, you know, kind of let that fall by the wayside and recognize all the opportunity that there is for you. Next, we have Kevin Swan by email. He says, gents, thank you for the thousands of hours you have invested to bring us this system. Having tried to learn Chinese off and on over the years, memorization has been the biggest roadblock for me. I used many apps for spaced repetition, had teachers issuing homework and explaining grammar, and worked hard to memorize hundreds of words. But I continually forget definitions, pronunciations, and tones. To learn writing, I studied radicals and their meanings and diligently wrote the characters hundreds of times, only to find an hour later that I'd have to look up the characters again. My maximum input was about 3 characters and 6 words daily, which took 2 hours. Despite all this, I could not keep the vocabulary in my head. I usually gave up somewhere around HSK2. So I'm just going to comment here for a second on this part because, man, this really gets across the importance of method. So I was talking with Kevin Kulwin, the other Kevin from earlier in the podcast, about mindset, which I do still think is the most important element. Understanding your priorities in relation to your values, which derive from your identity. Okay, but Kevin Swan here had the right mindset, right? He was using the right mindset, and yet the methods he was using were, you know, 2 hours to get 3 characters and 6 words. 2 hours for that? That's crazy. But he was, you know, not to be denied. He wanted to make sure that he's going to learn Chinese. He's got the right mindset. It's evident he has the right mindset because he's willing to go through all of this, you know, bull honky to get to his goal, and yet he was still stymied. That just goes to show that it's not just mindset, it's also method. Like Luke just made a video called How I Made Chinese Easy. Check it out over on our YouTube channel, where he talks about the 3 things that most influence success with a language and what makes them hard or easy. The smallest element is the particular language. You know, sure, Chinese is probably harder to learn than Spanish overall, but if you have a bad method and mindset, it could be way harder to learn Spanish and way easier to learn Chinese if you had the right method and mindset. And he said mindset is most important, but what Kevin's getting across here is how if you have a good mindset but still a bad method, you can still sometimes fail. But I would say that the reason he didn't fail is because the mindset kept him looking for a better method, and then he found us, which is where I'll continue with his email. He says, "This morning, using Mandarin Blueprint, I learned 17 new characters and 36 new words contained in 33 lessons over the course of about 1.5 hours. Based on these numbers, your method is at least 5 times more efficient than what I used before. And I remember what I'm inputting. After an input session, I use Traverse to check recall and see if any movies need tweaking. I breeze through with only a couple of errors. Even though I've been doing this for a while now, level 19, I still marvel at how easy it is to recall tones, pronunciations, and definitions, and quickly reproduce complex characters like man, even though I only wrote it one time and it was introduced in the lesson. Oh, and bonus, I'm having fun, Kevin." So, isn't that amazing how much a method can make a difference, right? If you have a method that builds on what you already know, builds on your natural human capabilities of recognizing people, objects, places, and actions, and then mapping them on to Chinese squiggles, and then using those characters in context as quickly as possible, you can reach a level of efficiency that was never possible before because, I mean, it just wasn't something that existed. There wasn't a full stack system that went all the way from simple components to full articles where everything was built from the bottom up. It just doesn't exist. So now you have a good method and you already had the right mindset. So just keep that going, you know, keep following that path. And, you know, your success is just a matter of when, not if. Next, we have Holly Tan on level 12 complete, phase 2 complete. "Thanks, Luke and Phil. I often think I can't believe how many thousands of videos you've made. What an enormous effort. I'm so satisfied to get to this point and feeling a real deep sense of fun and delight in learning Chinese, maybe for the first time." Well, you touched on the point of why we've been willing to put in this quote-unquote enormous effort, which is that we also find it a fun and delightful process. The process of us making the course is somewhat similar to the process of learning Chinese, in the sense that we have to take every character into account and build something around it and then, you know, move on to the next character and make sure that that's clear and easy to follow. And as a result, you can then just go through it and, you know, the effort that we put into it is, it's coming from a place of love because we just are really enjoying the process, and the fact that it's helping people just provides endless fuel to keep it going. And, you know, there have been times when it's been like, wow, it's a lot of work. But, you know, it's never felt like it's not worth it. It's always felt like it's worth it. And I also just point out that now that you're finished with phase two, Holly, like practically speaking, you don't have to watch all the videos. If you find a video is unnecessary for you to get the point of the lesson, you know, the lesson is usually, we're teaching you this word, we're teaching you this character, you know, read these sentences. If you know what to do, you can just do it. And also, starting from phase three and beyond, many of the lessons don't even have a video. So you'll be good to go in that sense. So thank you so much for all your efforts, Holly. It's fantastic. Next, we have a comment from Renee Medved on the Legends of Language Learning course clip called "Is Language Learning Hard?" featuring Matt versus Japan. And just as a reminder, if you'd like to sign up for Legends of Language Learning, the link to do so is in the show notes. It's free. It's a bunch of interviews with polyglots and language learning experts. Renee says, "Been watching Chinese dramas for a few years, for the most part exclusively. I have been looking for something to help learn the language, but I don't just want to speak it as with any other language. Reading and writing are a huge factor. Lots of questions have been answered in your YouTube videos, which makes me want to learn more. I have learned the hard way and the no retention way of learning language. I'm excited to see what y'all have to offer in starting the process of learning the language. I know a few words due to watching dramas. I have been going over pronunciation of sounds, as I think this might be my biggest hurdle. After listening to your YouTube videos, I now have a better understanding. I keep listening to them. just starting the journey into language learning, and I don't want traditional learning. I fail and don't retain that way. Translation on dramas I watch isn't one-to-one, and wonder what I'm missing. Learning the language to me means being able to not just speak it, but read and write it. This is the first program I have seen that brings all aspects together. Looking forward to see what all this program has to offer. Well, you're in for a treat, Renee, because we have taken everything into account in regards to becoming both literate and fluent. One part of that is just our general philosophy. We're like, if you're going to learn a language, be literate. Don't be an illiterate speaker of a language. But secondly, it's practical. Chinese has a ton of homophones, and when you're just listening and not doing any of the reading and writing, it becomes very confusing. Whereas if you learn the characters, they look nothing alike, so your brain has more things to pattern recognize, and then it picks up on the surrounding context, and then you begin to be able to hear the differences, because even if two words have the exact same pronunciation, tone included, they very rarely get used in the exact same context. So there's enough patterns for you to recognize because you did the reading when you're just listening. You'll see that it's very, you know, well thought out. And even where we didn't think something out well, somebody asked a question and we answered it. So make sure you check the comments. It's really cool how Mandarin Blueprint has become this thing where every lesson contains nuggets of treasure, because every day we get more people leaving comments. And it's unbelievable the amount of comments we get just every day. And most of them are just people leaving nuggets of wisdom behind. They're not asking a question. They're just saying, hey, this is what I did here for the next person coming along. I'm paying it forward because they got it paid it forward to them when they went through. And so they're leaving. It's just great. It's a really positive cycle, a virtuous circle. All right. So thank you, Renee, for that question. Next, we have Melissa Neeson on the final lesson of phase 5. She says, I am thrilled I've finally finished the foundation course. After a couple of years of working on and off with a tutor, I started the pronunciation course 21 months ago, but I'm still having a blast learning Chinese, in no small part due to this course. I have a lot of things I do to learn and stay interested in learning, but Mandarin Blueprint is the backbone of my method. During those 21 months, I worked a full-time job that my studies are not an official part of and had life happen in a few big ways, but I kept at it because I had the blueprint to come back to every time. Phase 4 was killer, partly because of its length and partly because that was when my life outside of Mandarin learning was really challenging me. There were times when I wasn't sure I had it in me to continue, but the encouraging messages from Phil and Luke always seemed to show up at the right time. Many thanks to both of you. Onward. That's fantastic to hear. I love stories like this because it's the busy people that we most want to convince it's worth it. Because just like I was talking about earlier with the priorities, like we have many priorities in life, our jobs, our relationships, things that connect to our values. Many things that we do connect to our values. And they're not mutually exclusive. Like if I say that I value love, connection, safety and security, health, freedom, novelty, status. If I say I you know, these are my values, that sometimes they come into contact in such a way that I have to suddenly bring something to the first priority. For example, you know, I love my fiance. We're getting married in a couple of months. And if her safety was ever in question, then because of my value of love and safety, my only priority would be getting her back to a secure situation, whatever that may be. And then once the status quo is returned, I can then think about things like, okay, well, I value health, so let me exercise. I value, you know, novelty, so let me learn Chinese so I can make more connections, all that stuff, which is another thing I value. And when you have life hit you, that doesn't mean that Mandarin suddenly doesn't become a priority. It just, you have to fill up the values. You have to make sure that your values are being filled up in the way that they need to be. And if Mandarin doesn't do that more than whatever, you know, is calling at your attention, you know, my cat's sick and needs to go to the vet right now, that's fine. Now, a lot of times there's ways that it can fit in. You know, there's the car ride to the vet is Mandarin playing. You know, like if you really do prioritize it, you can find ways to fit it in even in some more intense situations. My point is that, you know, 21 months have passed since you started the blueprint, Melissa, and the next 21 months are going to pass. And then the next 21 months after that, and then another 21 months, you know. And so the time is going to come. And until we kick the bucket, we're going to be aware of that time passing. And are the actions we take during that time serving our values, which derive from who we are as a person? If it does, then you can be proud. You can be content. There's a chance, you know. Life is always that yin-yang. And the time is going to come anyway, so you might as well be using the time to serve things that you love and value. You clearly value Mandarin, and you've done an excellent job to get this far. And I love it when busy people still manage to succeed. Just keep it up. And then, hey, who knows? Maybe at some point, you know, even a few years down the road, you have some more time and you really sink your teeth more into it because other things aren't calling as much of your attention. But it doesn't, even if it does take like 10 years at your current pace to reach a level of fluency that you're satisfied with, well, it was coming anyway. So why not, you know, do at least one thing today? Because that's really going to add up over a 10-year period.
Hey everyone, Luke here. When it comes to speaking fluent Mandarin, there are basically 7 possible barriers that can hold learners back. Take our free quiz to get a personalized guide to Mandarin fluency and find out how to break through your personal barrier to fluent Chinese. It only takes a minute or two to complete. Just head over to mandarinblueprint.com/quiz and get started. Now back to the show.
Next we have Clayton on Make a Movie for Huo. And Clayton says, is it bad to use a homophone as a mnemonic? I've already done this for the conjunction but, B-U-T, and I'm sure that it was to B-U-T-T, but. And I was thinking to do this again here by using or, because huo means or as a conjunction, and what Clayton here is saying is or as in the O-A-R thing that helps you paddle a boat. I've also tried to work the quote-unquote real meaning into the scene, but the focal point, the special effect ending of the scene, is the object, in this case, an or. Not only is it not bad to do this, I think this is one of the best ways to concretize an abstract concept. Or, the conjunction, is abstract. You can't just see it. You can come up with things where it's like, oh, here's a major choice, the red pill or the blue pill, and these things work as well, but by turning the abstract keyword of the conjunction or into the concrete object of an or to paddle a boat, you've hacked the process of making a connection. Then you go, well, is he going to think it's an or from a boat? And it's like, no, because we're not stupid. You can remember that you made that connection. It's not that big of a leap. It's right there, actually. It's like, the conjunction or sounds like or. It's like they're so close to each other. And so you're not going to later think like, what? I'm reading this sentence that has huo in it. And does this mean an or in a boat? What could this mean? Like, it's like, there's no way that you're going to think that. And so I wouldn't worry about it. That's actually a great method. So do that as much as you want. And if it ever becomes confusing, you then have SRS to help save you. So, all good. Next, we have Richard Wade on Pronunciation Primer for Beginners. This video is actually our most popular YouTube video that we uploaded to the Mandarin Blueprint Challenge companion course because a prerequisite for using the Henzi movie method in the Mandarin Blueprint Challenge is to make sure that you know pinyin or at least have the basics down. And so we uploaded it there. But regardless, if you are interested in this video, it's our most popular video on YouTube now. It's had over 150,000 views in the past 28 days. So if you want a refresher on Chinese, especially if you've already done pronunciation mastery, this video is essentially a condensed version of pronunciation mastery, which is an 8-hour course. This video is about an hour long. It would be a great refresher for you if you didn't want to have to go through the whole pronunciation mastery course again. All right, so here's Richard's comment on this video. He says, Luke, This is both an impressive and informative video. Well done. As a beginner who has had a look at some beginner material, it is clear that pronunciation is very important and a crucial starting point. It absolutely is. Thank you for laying out the pinyin system. Although my brain is now soggy with all the new information, the main ideas are there and should be strengthened through regular input. Thank you also for offering this introduction course. It gives a great sense of what the Mandarin Lumen course offers, which is what I was looking for. CSU, Richard. I'm really glad to hear that this was Richard's experience because, you know, this is what we're going for. YouTube channel. Every day we put out new short form content. We put out long form content on a fairly regular basis. We're going for weekly. Sometimes it takes a little longer than weekly. And that's all free. And Instagram stuff, all free. This is, you know, we want to give that stuff away for free. And then we also want to have the Mandarin Blueprint Challenge. It's only $7. So it's a, you know, very affordable price point so that people can know about this. Because here's the deal. Mandarin Blueprint has premium pricing because it has to, right? There's no choice about it. And I hope that people understand this. Like, if we want to give the level of service that is necessary to make sure that you're not alone on the journey to fluency, we can't charge $50 for the whole thing because we wouldn't be able to handle it. It's just a fact of the matter. It would be too much, too many people and too many questions to answer. No matter how efficient we are, there would be no way to deal with it. So we have to sell it at a premium price. But the thing is, it's not expensive. Premium price doesn't mean expensive because expensive means you're getting less value than the price. But our argument is no. You're getting so much more value than the price. You're getting a deal with the Mandarin Blueprint. And the reason why is because it gives you as much or if not more material than a university degree does that you can move at your own pace and have people helping you along the way. And you will leave the Mandarin Blueprint whenever you're finished with it with more knowledge than the average person from a university would have. And I know, I went to university. I saw so many people graduate from Sichuan University from the Gaoji Kecheng, the highest level, and they sucked at Chinese. So I know that their methods suck. Our methods don't suck. It gets you just as much information at your own pace, which could be even faster than a university degree, depending on how quickly you move through it. In terms of hours, it's definitely faster than a university degree. But if you only have 30 minutes a day, it might take longer than 4 years. But it's like if you spent 8 hours a day on it, I mean, unbelievably faster than a university degree. And so my point being is that it's not expensive. It's just it's a great deal. But it is a premium price because we have to do that in order to make sure that we have the ability to serve you the whole time is essentially the driving factor. And it's like people think because if they'd never thought about running a business, they think that it's the driving factor behind price is like greed or something like that. But that doesn't work because if you just go like, I have this crap thing and I'm charging $1 million for it, it's like nobody will buy it and you'll be broke. So it what drives the price to be where it is our insistence on it remaining quality and then comparing that with its popularity and then going, okay, so this is the price point that works, you know, approximately. And it's still, there's an art to it. Like I'm sure we don't have it perfect, but the point is that's why that is, but it's still 100% a deal. And that's the thing that, you know, again, expensive means that the value is lower than the price. The value of Mandarin Blueprint is so much higher than the price, it's unbelievable. So, you know, anyway, I hope that makes sense. So thank you, Richard, for sharing your input. Next, we have Tony Garcia on Level 2 Complete. He says, I can't tell you how encouraging it is to look at a character and say, I don't remember what this means, and actually have a method of retracing my memory steps to figure out what those squiggly lines mean again. Like the tone, letters, the ability to actually investigate meaning without looking it up is such a huge deal for me because I hate memorizing things, but I love stories. And when I read this, I was so excited because Tony gets this benefit of the course that's really hard to explain to somebody if they haven't tried it. So we don't even bother trying to really put this forward as a selling point because I think it just confuses people. But, you know, if you're learning by rote, imagine it like this. Imagine that you had like a little 7-piece build a brick set. And in order to put the 7 pieces together, they would end up forming a brick. And then you could put that brick onto a building that you're building. With rote learning, you're trying to piece that together in things that don't fit. And if you don't keep pushing it and you're cramming it together, you know, then it's going to fall apart and you're going to have no brick. Whereas the Man in Blue method basically says, okay, there's 7 things you need to remember about this character. And so we're going to come up with 7 great mnemonics to remember each of these things. And oops, you forgot 1 of the 7. Well, that's just a piece that fell off of the 6-foot piece puzzle piece. And now we're just going to, you know, slightly improve it and fit it back in. And then you use it in context and add it as a brick to your building you're building. And everything stays built. And then occasionally a little thing falls off here or there, but you just quickly fix it. And it's actually a building process. And this is one of those things that's so hard to explain to people because when you do it by rote, you're only doing one thing, writing it over and over. And so if you forget, there's only one method to fix it, write it over and over. Whereas if you, say, forgot an element of a scene, you didn't forget the whole thing. I very, very rarely, I don't even know if I ever have, completely forgotten every element of a scene that I came up with because it includes people, objects, places, and actions, all of which we are evolutionarily highly skilled at. We inherited these things by being born as a human being and not a salamander, right? So the fact that we can do these things so easily is so deeply ingrained that when you forget something, it's forgetting built on a foundation of strength. Not a foundation of, oh, I just, there was only one method I used to learn this, writing over and over, and now I forgot it, so let me just go back to that one method, right? So Tony really got this here with that, and so I'm so glad to hear that. Next, we have a question from Kevin Swan on jar in context. Here's a sentence. 我自己在这儿过日子. I live my life here. What does 自己 add to this sentence? I want to translate it as something like, I live my life here alone. Okay, so what he's pointing out is if you just said, 我在这儿过日子, then this would mean I live my life here, so what's the 自己 for? And if you wanted to emphasize alone, like Kevin did, the point is that you live here alone, you'd actually say it like this. You'd say, 我在这儿一个人过日子. One person, 过日子. And that means the reason they do it that way is because that's the emphasis, that it's one person alone, right? If you say, 我自己在这儿过日子, the emphasis is that you're on your own or independent. Subtle difference, but you're not saying, I'm alone. Woe is me. I'm lonely. It's not alone. It's I'm on my own. Right? So you can imagine like an 18-year-old saying this, like, haha, mom and dad, 我自己在这儿过日子. I'm doing this by myself. Like there's some reason, and it could plenty of other reasons why you might want to say it this way, but that's the emphasis, that it's on your own, independent. You know, like imagine a kid, 我自己做了, I did it myself, right? I didn't need your help, mom and dad. It's like our whole lives, isn't it? So that's the emphasis that's happening here. If you want to emphasize alone, you'll say 一个人. Look out for that as you continue to get input. You'll see. All right, next we have another one from Tony. We have several from Tony this week because he's such an interesting guy because he his childhood was partially homeschooled and partially in, you know, other schools. And so he's got a very open mind towards educational theory, and it's great. So Tony says, in high school, my Spanish teacher saw me doing some conservative dance moves in my chair, silently mouthing words to myself. We were doing a test on the capital cities of South America. See, she knew that boring memorization needed help, so she had already taught us the cities with a cheesy rumba beat to sing along the city names to. But that wasn't enough for me. The next day, she asked me what I was doing, and I bashfully explained that I made dance moves that had meaning associated with the city's name, meaning, or sound. La Paz was a couple of peace Vs. Caracas was as if I was holding maracas. Yeah, nice. To keep in time with the music, Montevideo sounded funky, so I scratched an invisible DJ turntable. Brasilia was such a stupid name that I just firmly nodded my head twice, like someone who was super proud of having come up with it. So I went through each embarrassing mnemonic dance move, and she was so thrilled that she had me teach it to the class. And last I heard, she went on to teach that dance to every class from then onward. I graduated over a decade ago, and I still know more South American capitals and their correct country than my own USA capitals. Right, and so I love this. Obviously, this is getting the point across that when you're learning any new random discrete fact, break out of the idea that you have to just sort of force it into your brain starting from a scratch foundation. You're not starting from scratch. You have so many things that could potentially help you remember this. A dance move, a smell, a smell, for example. I just thought of smell. Well, one of the capitals of South America is Lima, Peru. Well, that's like Lima's kind of like lima beans. So I could imagine juggling lima beans to the dance move right after scratching the Montevideo thing, you know, and then that gives me Lima, Peru, even though, yeah, Lima, lima, close enough. Then I'll just imagine I'm doing ayahuasca in the mountains. But the point is, there's so many things you could do to, you know, make connections to various random discrete facts. And once you get over, which a lot of people seem to have, that initial resistance to this, and you just let go and say, look, my brain is it's not a computer. It has all these experiences that sometimes just appear in my mind's eye for some reason. And now that, I'm an adult, I can just utilize that. I can just go, okay, so Lima, Peru, Bogota, Santiago, what comes to my mind? You know, like Chile, Buenos Aires, okay, Argentina, you know, do I have any thoughts about this? Are there any sounds? Are there any dance moves? Are there any, you know, like, do I know any people? Like, I knew an Argentinian woman that I dated for a little bit, and she was from Buenos Aires. Like, it's like, there's so many things you can do to try to connect to these random sounds. And what a better way to go about it. What a more fun way to go about it, right? Next, we have Stephen Lam on tu in context. He says, in the sentence, 我早上吐了,下午没吐. The word tu means to vomit, but it could also mean spit if it's pronounced tu. If the sentence is spoken, you would know by the tone which was the intended meaning. But if I read this sentence, how would I know which was the intended meaning? In the context of this sentence, it could mean either one. So we gave an answer, and then he came up with a second comment here. He said, in normal situations, I would agree that if a person is sick, that they might vomit. But what if the person is a child who could get a written report from school and use the word tu or tu in a text message? Depending on which word was the correct one, the parent would have to either discipline the child or need to care for the child's health. How would you clarify which one? Is there another word or use the word in a unique way that the meaning is not ambiguous? I don't mean to be difficult here. I just am a firm believer in having clear communications and how that helps everyone. Okay, so there are a couple of words. So for example, tu tan. Tan is phlegm. So if you were to say tu tan, again, it's a bit more of a formal way to say this thing. But if you said that, then you would be clear that you're talking about spitting. And then there's o tu, which is the word for vomit. And that's the more formal word for vomit. And I bet that if a teacher was texting a parent, that they would probably say o tu. The reason why is because o tu is a little bit more formal, but so is the parent-teacher relationship. You know, parents and teachers don't talk to each other like friends at a bar usually, unless they've broken the ice a little bit deeper than normal. So they would probably use the more formal word. Also, Chinese people are aware that you need to clarify things when you're starting a conversation. This text. 我早上吐了，下午没吐。Well, first of all, that would be the child. So the child would have to be texting the parent because it starts off with 我. But you wouldn't start a text message that way. You'd probably start off by framing it as I was sick and then in the morning I vomited, in the afternoon I didn't. Right, this would be the type of thing you would say. And then also, if it were a disciplinary text that was about the kid spit, you know, well, if you just spit on the floor, 吐在地上. Well, first of all, if you said 吐在地上, that would be clear that you were saying, you know, spit on the floor. In that case, there's almost definitely not going to be a call to the parent. I mean, that's not that crazy of a behavior. It's like, oh, maybe you get a little bit of, you get scolded or something, but that's not going to call the parent. But if you spit on someone, 吐在小王的面, right? It's like, well, that's spit on his face. It's not vomit on his face. If vomited on his face, it wouldn't, your concern wouldn't be for Xiaowang. It would be for the person who vomited, right? Like, it'd be like, you know, so my point is that, like, there's almost no situation I can imagine where the teacher or the person who spit or vomited doesn't clarify what they mean through the surrounding context. So this is definitely overthinking. It's definitely no need to consider this at this deep of a level. It will not be an issue moving forward. I, you know, 99.9% guarantee it. Okay, and then the final comment here comes from Tony again, and I think this is just a really interesting comment about the perspective on Mandarin Blueprint from somebody who was homeschooled. So here's what Tony has to say. Having been mostly homeschooled, I found it an interesting difference. When you're teaching your child, you need to think, how can I get him to understand? When you're teaching someone else's child, you think, how can I prove to the people who are paying me that my teaching is effective? Now, some teachers happen to stumble across a jet stream that accomplishes both, but unfortunately, that's because of an exceptional teacher, not an exceptional instruction method. Here, we find that you two have both, exceptional teachers with an exceptional instructional method. It's why I'm here, staying here, and supportive of this whole thing. It falls right in line with how I've come to understand the world and my lived experiences up to this point. So often, I'll not only remember a thing, but remember where I learned it too. I know the Spanish word puerta to mean door because for some dumb reason, I always think of a man running around screaming, La puerta, as if a building is on fire. I don't know why. I know the English vocab word propensity because right after reading it in the dictionary, I heard a man on stage say it a few days later. I still remembered that the building, side of the audience I was on, and my feeling of astonishment that I'd hear a rare word like that used all of a sudden. I know what a Pareto distribution is because my statistics friend explained it to me, and then Jordan Peterson used it in an answer to a question, where JP spread his hands out as if he was holding an accordion. That motion has nothing to do with the distribution shape, but I associate the two now. These sorts of video file attachments are on tons of random crap I know. So why not intentionally create them too? It just makes sense. I love that Tony's, he's broken the mold of traditional educational theory and recognized that you can learn by connecting to anything. And so why not create them? That's, yeah, exactly. That's the exact thing. It's like, just create them, manufacture a connection that isn't manufactured from randomness. It's manufactured from things you've experienced in life. So just apply them to Chinese and then you can learn at an exponential rate because it's way easier to learn something that is closely connected to what you already know than starting from scratch, as I mentioned before. The only reason that Luke and I have been able to do this thing of having both the, you know, exceptional instructional method and, you know, okay teaching, you know, I appreciate the compliment, but the only way we're able to do it is because of the technologies that are available today. Like, the overhead of running a business like this used to be insane if we wanted to have this type of reach. Certainly we couldn't have done it before the internet. And then even just technologies that have come about in the past 5 years are built on things that, you know, Luke and I are just piggybacking off of. Like, it's like, I don't know how to code, you know, so I'm not going to create a website that hosts videos and all that stuff and flashcard software that works great and all that stuff. So we, all we can do is go into deals with people and just say, like, okay, let's work together on this and build it up. And because, and the thing is, because of all that great work that people have done, the overall cost of running a business like this is considerably lower than it used to be. I mean, it's still, you know, we've still invested a lot of money, but that money is from the perspective of, like, I don't know, my personal income, I would look at it and be like, that's a lot of money. But compared to what it would cost to build a curriculum as big as Mandarin Blueprint, even 10 years ago, much less 20 years ago, it's night and day. You know, it's way cheaper. And so that means that we have the possibility of having a good methodology of teaching alongside, you know, teachers who really care, because at the end of the day, we are Chinese learners ourselves. So that's what it comes down to. I mean, a huge amount of the motivation for Mandarin Blueprint is a simple psychology thing. It's like, imagine that you figured out a way, you figured out the treasure map that leads to the treasure, and it's like it's an inexhaustible treasure that everybody can have as much as they want. Don't worry about the economic implications of the inflation of that, but like, just imagine that. And you see and you saw the path to get there, and then you see everyone else walking towards a path that goes right into a booby trap, and everybody just keeps walking into it. You'd be like, no, stop walking there. No, come here. Like, let me show you. Right. So that's like the psychology behind Mandarin Blueprint, is us just going like, no, come back, we'll save you. So it's just that basic thing. Anybody would be like that if you figured out the right way to do something. And so that's where it is. Thank you so much, Tony, for that comment. And thank you all for listening to this week's episode of the Mandarin Blueprint podcast. Even though this is the second time I recorded it, I think it was even a little bit better this time. So fantastic work. And head over to mandarinblueprint.com. Got a new website. Watch that new webinar we have out. Very excited. It's right there in the top corner of the website. Lots of great stuff going on. Appreciate you all. 太感谢你们了. And 下次见.
Thanks for tuning into the Mandarin Blueprint podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Oh, and don't forget to follow us on social media. Just search Mandarin Blueprint on all of the major social media platforms. Also, if you're ready to take your Chinese learning to the next level, consider joining the Mandarin Blueprint Challenge. For just $7, you can reach basic Chinese literacy in 15 days. Simply go to mandarinblueprint.com/challenge to sign up. And finally, don't forget to check out all of the free stuff available at mandarinblueprint.com/resources. Thank you again for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Mandarin Blueprint podcast.